In the 1970s, America was waking up to the fact that the disabled should have rights, even the mentally disabled. Congress began to pass laws to protect people who are born with developmental handicaps from abuse and neglect. We even began to see characters on TV and at the movies who were what was called slow or retarded. New York Times writer Dan Barry says horizons were broadening everywhere, it seemed, except in a small village in Iowa called Atalissa. Barry says while America evolved, life for a group of men in Atalissa revolved. He tells the story of these men in his book, The Boys in the Bunkhouse. Dan Barry, how did life revolve for this cluster of men?
Well, Lisa, they woke up at around 3:30 or 3:45 in the morning, and they had a very quick breakfast. And then they were taken by van to a turkey processing plant about 6 miles away. And they worked through until the mid-afternoon or late afternoon. And then on the way home, if they were perceived to have worked hard enough, they were allowed to stop at a convenience store and get, you know, a beef jerky or a Mountain Dew. And if they were perceived not to work hard enough, they were taken back to this schoolhouse that had been converted into a bunkhouse, and they were punished. They were made to walk around the gymnasium with weights. They were kicked in the butt. They were called names. And then they would shower. They would have a dinner. They might watch TV if they were allowed to. Some of the punishment involved not allowing them to watch television, even though they were grown men. And then they would go to bed and do it all over again.
As you say, these were grown men. They had one particular thing in common. I mean, they're very different from each other, but what was the commonality?
All these men had intellectual disability, and they all came from different state schools around the state of Texas. And in the late 60s, there was a movement, rightly, to take people like these men and teach them a skill and reintegrate them into society where they rightfully belong.
So this is kind of an experimental work program. It was considered progressive, actually.
It was at the time. They were taken to a ranch in Texas, in Goldthwaite, Texas. And they were taught a specific skill, which was to catch turkeys. No one really wants that job, but they would do it. And they would catch the toms, milk the toms, and run the semen over to the hen house. It's a dirty, messy job, but that's what they were good at. And then after a couple of years, they became so proficient at it, their overseers said, why don't we break them up into work groups? And this group, maybe 50 or 60 men at a time, went to Atalissa, Iowa, to work at a turkey processing plant in nearby West Liberty.
This is the Lewis Rich plant there.
That's right. That's right.
They were productive, understanding it was jobs that nobody else wanted to do, but they were used as cheap labor. They got paid, but their paychecks were gouged a lot. How so?
These men began this job in 1974. They were trucked up from Texas in 1974. And at the beginning of this process, they were being paid $65 a month, plus room and board and like the occasional visit to an amusement park or a campsite. And in 2009, when this operation was exposed for what it was, they were earning $65 a month, plus room and board and the occasional trip.
And many of them suffered from the work.
That's right. For example, Willie Levi, who was from Orange, Texas. He was effectively left at the doorstep of his state school when he was about 17 or 18. A very good athlete, a very good singer, had moderate intellectual disability, and he went to work at this turkey processing plant with a bunch of other men. Over the years, you know, his knees suffered, his hands suffered. Their hands became kind of constricted, almost talon-like, from reaching inside the gizzards of turkeys for so many years. It was a process where they would eviscerate maybe 10, 15, 20,000 turkeys a day, and you do that kind of repetitive work along an assembly line, standing all day long, you're going to suffer in your hands, your knees, your legs, your back. In addition, there's the psychological toll of never being challenged beyond that simple task, and also being told over and over again that you were not working hard enough, even though you were working extremely hard.
When they suffered certain maladies, like Mr. Levi, what kind of medical care would they get?
The people who ran this program, they were from Texas. It was a company called Henry's Turkey Service. And they did not want to enroll the men in any of the social services available in Iowa. They were technically still Texan residents. So what would happen is Willie Levi would need some kind of medical attention, and he would go to a local doctor or to a hospital, but the hospital or the doctor would be paid in cash, and then that money would be deducted from Levi's pay.
Not only was medical care deducted, but also their room, their board, and an appropriation that was supposed to go to some kind of a pension or a retirement fund.
Right. So these men are in their 30s, and now they're in their 40s, now they're in their 50s. They're enduring the ravages of age. But what they held on to was a promise from their bosses that when they were retired, they would go back to Texas and live in a retirement home built especially for them, where they could fish and they could just relax because they'd worked so hard for so many years. And money was being deducted from their pay, except it turned out that that project was only half finished. In fact, it was never finished. And so all that money was for naught.
And they didn't get the money back.
Oh, they never got the money back, no.
During the time, though, that they were working toward retirement, in this bunkhouse, and maybe you can describe it for us and the community around it.
Attalus is a very small town of about 250, 300 people, a farming community, a couple of churches, a couple of bars, and a mini-mart at the time. And on the top of a small hill that oversaw this little village was a schoolhouse that had been built in 1911. So the building was really never meant for habitation. As the years went by, the building declined just as the men declined. There were holes in the roof, so rainwater and snow melt would drip down into the men's bedrooms or into the dining room where they ate. It became overrun with cockroaches and other vermin. It was not a proper place to live for anybody.
But they did live there, and they had something of a life. I mean, they were given food and beer and prostitutes at certain points. They had birthday parties, etc. But the men were also part of the community itself. Can you describe how?
At first, Attalussa kept them at arm's length. Imagine this small village suddenly sees its population grow by 20 or 30%, and they're all Texans, and they're all men with intellectual disability. But gradually, the town accepted the men. The men became part of the local fabric, in fact. You would see Levi down at the post office, or you would see Gene Berg and Henry Wilkins down at the mini-mart, or at the bar even on Friday nights, they would have root beer, and they would dance with the local women. That was a big deal. If you dance with one, you dance with all the women, in Attalussa say.
And the husbands would stand by with a beer in their hands and use a half smile on their face.
A half smile, right? Not a complete smile. But and also the men from the bunkhouse became involved in one of the local churches, the Zion Lutheran Church. And they became part of a choir. They became their own choir, in fact. And also, if they didn't know the words to the prayers, if they couldn't say the prayers, the pastor allowed them to hum to the rhythms, say, of the Lord's Prayer. And so congregants have told me that that was very spiritual and moving. So the men, in many ways, were very much a part of Attalussa life.
So what happened to open the eyes of the people of Attalussa to what was really going on in the bunkhouse?
In 2009, the men who were running this operation, Henry's Turkey Service, decided it was over. All the so-called bunkhouse boys were now in their 60s and 70s, and they were getting too tired to do this kind of difficult work. And so it was decided that they would be retired. And now because that vacation home was never, or that retirement home, rather, was never finished, it was decided that the men would be parceled out to various nursing homes in Texas. And a sister of one of the men called up the company to say, okay, well, we'll have to figure out what to do with Keith. He's been working for you for 30-odd years. How much money has he saved? And the answer was $86 of 30 years' work. And so she went ballistic, quite frankly, and called everybody in state government. For many years, there had been complaints filed or dimes dropped, and the Department of Labor would come in and find them. But no one really took full embrace of what had happened here. And so finally, in 2009, all of this had built up. The sister calls the state of Iowa. They descend upon the bunkhouse. It becomes almost like a crime scene. And social workers and even the FBI are walking through this fetid building, not believing that 30 or 40 men with intellectual disability have been living here. So that exposed this operation and immediately ended it. And all the men were effectively rescued and taken to a local motel for a few days.
There is so much more to the story and so many more questions about how this could happen. But I wonder if you can tell us the postscript, where the men are today. And I know you're still in touch with some of them, how they're doing.
Some of the men are in Texas living with family. A couple are living in nursing homes. And then more than a dozen are living in Waterloo, Iowa, in neighborhood homes. One man is living by himself. Another man is living in Des Moines with his girlfriend. And so they are living the lives that had been denied to them so long ago. It's wonderful, but it's depressing because they should have had those lives many, many years ago.
The book is called The Boys in the Bunkhouse, Servitude and Salvation in the Heartland, beautifully told by Dan Barry. You can find a link to the New York Times video of Dan's story at hereandnow.org. Dan Barry, thanks a lot.
Oh, thank you, Lisa, very much.